same as they did in 2011.
Well, I want to thank you very much. Miriam Arakh, anthropologist, democracy activist, currently based in Britain, lecturer at the University of Westminster in London, currently writing a book about the February 20th movement in Morocco, where we are headed the week after Election Day. We'll be there for the week covering the UN Climate Summit. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkner, Marian Shea, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdien, and Dina Custer, Sam Alkoff. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us. Hi, this is Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, congratulating Kathleen Stevenson on her retirement after nearly 30 years as KBOO's AM News and Public Affairs Director. Kathleen started at KBOO as a volunteer in 1985 and joined the staff just a few years later. During her decades at KBOO, she greatly expanded KBOO's literary and cultural programming. Kathleen, it's been such an honor and pleasure to work alongside you. Congratulations, and thank you for all that you've done for KBOO and for all of us in independent media.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Let Us Grow on Friday, November 4th at Mercy Corps in Portland. Let It Grow celebrates the work of bringing education and the experience of gardening to incarcerated youth and adults in Oregon's correctional facilities. This event features the premiere of the documentary Can You Dig This? And a panel discussion after the film. Again, that's Let Us Grow, a benefit for growing gardens, taking place Friday, November 4th at Mercy Corps, 45 Southwest Ankeny Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning.
Hey, everything's working and it's all cool.
It always works. This is KBOO.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Hooray.
My name's Abe. That guy is Joe.
Yeah.
This is, by inference, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
It's true.
90.7 on your FM dial.
231-8187. We do want to hear from you.
Yes,
we're
going to
be talking about a bunch of stuff.
Well, we have other ways that people can get to us.
What is that?
They can write to us on the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Or they can tweet.
Tweet?
To the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72.
Little birdies go tweet, tweet, tweet.
Yes, yes.
I don't like
presidential candidates go tweet, tweet, tweet.
Presidential candidate can't stop tweeting.
That's right. All right. Well, you got a little something to start off
well,
before
yeah,
we get to the
I
other
just,
thing.
I yes. just want to touch bases. A very important, people probably who listen to the station know this, but a very, very important struggle is going on over water rights, over ancestral rights of Native Americans, over the danger of pipelines throughout the Midwest, messing with the aquifers, and that struggle having excited interest among Native Americans and others to save the environment. That's Standing Rock.
You're talking about North Dakota.
North Dakota, and the behavior of the authorities is so fascist and bizarre.
I think that the struggle is about something much more, much deeper than the things you just talked about, although it is about those things.
Okay.
I think it's about the right of an entity to make a profit overriding everything else. So this is about the rights of human beings and those things that matter to their humanity and their culture being allowed to take precedence over profit.
Well, that's always the way it is. It's America.
Yeah, it's America.
Buddy.
Yeah.
I mean, we got for example, we got the Trump.
Yeah,
the,
yeah.
The ultimate tax avoider.
That's right.
I can't get over that.
But please continue.
No, I don't want to spend a long time on this because it's really not the topic that we're going to dwell on today. But you all should know that the struggle that's going on at Standing Rock is your struggle, as well as my struggle, as well as everyone's struggle, as well as, of course, the struggle of Native American peoples. This is really important. Putting down these pipelines, laying them down, going underneath the aquifers, underneath the water supplies, destroying ancestral burial grounds, in general, behaving in a very bad way, is part of what's going on at the last stages of capitalism in this culture. And it's all about fossil fuels, which need to be abandoned as quickly as possible. And the denial that we see in the fossil fuel industry is very distressing and very scary. And then the support with tanks and all manner of weapons that's going on in North Dakota, not just disgusting, but dangerous. So that's what's going on there. That's something you ought to be, if you're doing tweeting, if you're yelling or screaming, if you're whatever you're doing, that's something that you ought to be excited about and alarmed about and joining the great struggle that represents.
Yeah, I agree.
Did that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
So now we're going to go from the sublime to the disgusting.
Okay, the sublime to the disgusting. What's the disgusting?
Oh, the presidential campaign.
Oh, that's so disgusting.
Of course. There's a week to go. Thank God. Only a week to go. This is...
I got my ballots right here.
Got your ballot right there?
Yeah.
Nice. You're going to mail it?
I'm going to take it down to the place and drop it right off there.
Oh, okay. Good for you. For those of you listening at home, you don't have to do that. You can put it in the mail.
Yes.
That's a brilliant thing.
Yes. Or take it to the library.
Or take it to the library, yes.
Yeah.
Senator Wyden of Oregon sponsored a bill in Congress, actually, to take vote by mail nationwide.
And where is that?
Well, it's still working its way through Congress. But since vote by mail has been proven to increase voter turnout substantially, I'm guessing it doesn't have a prayer.
Okay.
Right. So there's a week to go in this election, and I think, Joe, you probably agree with me that this is one of the most bizarre campaigns in memory. I'm relatively young. Well, okay, no, I'm not young, but, you know.
Well, you're middle-aged.
Right.
And I'm ancient.
That's right. In my lifetime, this is by far the weirdest one, unless you count things like the Bush v. Gore disputed.
Well, that was pretty weird.
That was pretty weird, yeah. But that didn't have the same level of weirdness throughout that this one has had.
Well, yes, this is a very strange phenomenon, and it's becoming more and more clear in the New York Times and other sources that Trump is a scallywag.
Yeah.
A carpetbagger.
Yeah, it would appear to be the case.
I'm using post-Civil War language.
Yeah, you are.
to avoid the what I really think.
There's substantial evidence to suggest that he has avoided paying tax for a long time.
Yes, tax avoidance is legal. Tax avoidance is legal. Legal, legal.
There's even more evidence to suggest that he has systematically defrauded contractors and employees and other people who have done work for him.
Yes.
The most recently, a pollster that he hired in this election, to whom he owes close to $800,000, has indicated he's not going to pay this pollster.
Why? Because he came up with bad results?
Yeah, it's not entirely clear why. Maybe I'll try and find out later on in the show. But that's just the latest example of Trump owing people money, deciding he's not going to pay them, and essentially daring them to sue him, knowing that his army of highly paid lawyers will likely get him out of that.
My main problem with him is physiological. It's the small hands. It worries me.
Well, yeah, the less said about that particular fixation of yours, the better.
Oh, it's not it's not my fixation. Trump's.
I want to go on record as saying the size of someone's hands have absolutely nothing to do with their fitness for the office of President of the United States. I'm just going to put that out.
You're going to put that out there?
Yeah.
You're really going to say that, huh?
Right.
Are you sure it's true?
No, but I'm pretty confident that it is.
Okay.
So on the one hand, you have this guy, Donald Trump, who by any objective measure is one of the strangest presidential candidates to come along in a long time.
And possibly the least qualified in a century.
Possibly the least qualified. But more importantly, when talking about his campaign, is less the man himself than the animating spirit that he has channeled. And I say that because there's a lot of pundits out there who are sort of wringing their hands and clutching their pearls and going, oh, look what Donald Trump has wrought upon the Republican Party. No, Donald Trump has simply served.
Is clutching their pearls kind of sexist, do you think?
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know.
All right.
Donald, they say, look what he has wrought upon the Republican Party. No, that's not the case. This man did not arise in a vacuum. What he has done is given voice to and amplified a segment of the conservative electorate who was waiting for somebody like him to come along. He is there because of what conservatism has done to itself over the past several decades.
Oh, you're so harsh. I just think they're all trying to establish the great democracy that hasn't come for ordinary working
people. You'd probably
be
wrong about that.
I would be. I think this is a lot about Roger Stone, about Steve Bannon, Breitbart. Mm-hmm. It's really, really about something called the alternative right.
Roger Ailes.
Yeah. I mean, all these guys are engaged in a process where they are not interested in the notion of democracy, small d. What they are really interested in is control and power. And they are really very effective at working for it.
Indeed. And there's, again, a tremendous amount of evidence to suggest that Trump himself is really all about control and power and being the biggest gorilla in the room at the end of the day. New York Magazine right now has a really interesting expose inside his campaign here in the late stages. I really recommend it. It's good reading. It talks about all these personalities you just mentioned and the Herculean task of Trump's campaign managers to sort of contain the guy and keep him from simply doing or saying whatever it is he wants to say. It's fascinating. It's a fascinating look both at the guy and his campaign and the personalities that are surrounding him at this moment.
Well, meanwhile, Hillary has email trouble again.
Well, she does.
It's nothing to do with her, though. It's amazing the way it's being reported.
It is amazing the way it's being reported, and I want to talk about that in just a minute.
Okay.
So on the other side of the equation, you have Secretary Hillary Clinton. A very intelligent, very experienced, very competent,
very hardworking,
politically connected, very hardworking candidate.
Yeah.
Also, universally reviled on the right. The only person that conservatives hate more than somebody named Obama is somebody named Clinton. And so you've seen her in the course of this campaign running against her husband's past peccadilloes.
I knew you'd say peccadilloes.
No, you didn't.
I knew that.
Peccadillo. It's a good word. I'd like to see peccadillos make it into more rotation in everyday life because it's a good word. There's a very strange phenomenon, a very strange psychological phenomenon that coalesces around Hillary Clinton. Her opponents believe she's guilty of something. They believe she's guilty of something. They don't know quite what it is. And there's this lingering and pervasive feeling that sooner or later, they're going to find something that sticks to her, and they'll all say, aha, See? I told you she was guilty of something.
I think what she's guilty of is having a vagina.
Well, yeah, she's probably guilty of that, yes.
Yeah. No, that's really what it's about.
And amongst the Obama-hating, Clinton-hating crowd, that goes a long way.
Yeah.
Towards discouraging her candidacy in their eyes. But they believe she's guilty of something. Sooner or later, the truth will out. But again and again and again, whether it's the email scandal, the Benghazi non-scandal, or even going back to her much previously in her life, the Watergate affair, the Travelgate affair, on and on and on, there's really nothing there. But nevertheless, there's this feeling that she is guilty of something.
Right.
And the facts be damned. Now, lest you interpret this as a full-throated defense of Hillary Clinton, it is not. She has not helped herself in this regard by making what appear to be pretty questionable decisions, like deciding to host her email communications on a privately run server. Now, the fact that this happened before doesn't necessarily make it a good idea. Probably not the best idea. If you're Secretary of State, best to keep your communications, especially your official ones, on a government-protected and sanctioned
apparatus. But Colin Powell said it was all right.
He did it too, but that's, I think, neither here nor there. There is a perception around her that she's extremely guarded about things and that she operates in a sort of a secretive way. And I think to a certain extent that's true.
I'm not sure it's
But
true.
I think it's a function of having been attacked for every damn thing she's ever done and said in her life.
I think what's really important to understand is from the beginning of the Clintons' ascendancy, way back in Arkansas, there has been smear after smear after smear. Most arcane and weird and vicious stuff has gone on unendingly. And it really has it turns out in all of it, it has no basis in fact. But it's done so often, it's done so well by the right wing that millions of people have bought into it. I have criticisms of Hillary that have nothing to do with that, that have to do with her politics and with her intentions and my fear that she'll bring us into a war. But that is not what this is about.
No, it really isn't what it's about. But nevertheless, there is this narrative, there is this perception that follows her, however false it is. And it has been exploited explicitly by her opposition in this campaign. Recall Donald Trump on a debate stage saying that if he was president, he's going to throw her in jail.
Yes.
That is just one of the many things that makes this one of the weirdest political campaigns that I've ever lived through. But that said, I think it's important to recognize an important fact here, is that really ever since Barry Goldwater lost the presidency, I think that there has been a perception on the right that any Democratic president or any Democratic presidential nominee is fundamentally illegitimate. And they're going to go after that person with both barrels. They're either going to try and discredit that person on the campaign trail, or if that person manages to win, to obstruct and discredit them while in office in any way they can. They did it to Carter, they did it to Clinton, they did it to Obama, and now they're doing it to Hillary Clinton.
That's all
just
true.
How they work. And now we're even hearing from the halls of Congress, from elected officials, that if Secretary Clinton wins this election, they're going to try and find a way to deny her Supreme Court nominees throughout her term.
It's what has happened essentially, and it's really important to understand, I guess, from the point of view of democracy. The whole system is held together by a mutually understood reasoning that argues that some cooperation around major issues, particularly national defense and the economy, need work together. And what has happened to that is that the alternate right, which dominates the Republican Party right now, has not bought into that. They believe that the best thing to do is to essentially destroy any possibility of collective work.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And that's really very, very scary because it's a very dangerous world with a lot of odd players on their own trips.
Yep.
I mean, we've got stuff like the fact that that various Russian mafias, et cetera, are engaging in messing with the American electoral process. That's real.
That is real. And not even Russian mafia groups, but some arm of the Russian government itself.
Same difference.
Same difference. Yeah, that's
no. It's a kleptocracy. Yeah.
It's a kleptocracy. Indeed,
it is not a democracy.
All right. So that brings us to this latest round of email non-scandals that I want to touch on just briefly.
Okay.
And then I want to throw it open to our callers to talk about this mess that we have.
Yeah, we got a lot of callers waiting. So go ahead.
Okay. So you all by this point know about the email investigation. Secretary Clinton kept her official communications on a private email server while Secretary of State. There was some question as to whether or not she might have mishandled some classified information in the course of doing so. A long and exhaustive investigation by the FBI came up with, well, no, none of that happened.
Zip, nada.
There was no classified action or information that was mishandled in this way, although the FBI did say, well, it's probably a bad idea.
Well, it's probably a bad idea.
To have a private email server.
Yeah, right. I agree. That's probably a bad idea.
So until recently, Hillary's right-hand woman, a woman named Huma Abedin, who doesn't work for Hillary anymore, was married to Anthony Weiner. Remember him?
Oh, I love Anthony.
The former congressman who got into trouble for...
He has big hands, no little hands.
For sending pictures of his wiener around on the internet.
Yes.
Now, he and Huma Abedin have recently separated over his most recent peccadillo. There it is again. Which was allegedly...
Allegedly, let's be clear.
Sexually charged text messages with an underage person.
Yes.
Okay. So, there's an investigation going on into that, into Weiner and his wiener. Right?
Right.
There's that investigation going on. Huma Abedin, as we just mentioned, worked for a long time for Hillary Clinton while Hillary was Secretary of State. Some of Huma Abedin's official communications while working for Hillary are on the same email server that Hillary used. So the FBI is investigating Anthony Weiner. They realize that some of the email communication that happened between Weiner and his wife took place under the umbrella of this email server. So they... being involved in a separate investigation, could not look at any of the other emails without a warrant, so they were obliged to tell the director of the FBI, who was then obliged to do something.
Mm.
And what he elected to do, in the eyes of many people who, many experts in the investigatory intelligence and lawmaking
circles.
Can
you spell sleazy?
Sleazy, yeah. It's the evidence suggests that James Comey, the director of the FBI,
right,
was acting out of concern about how he might be perceived by fellow conservatives. He is a Republican, even though he's serving under a Democratic administration. And that this motivated him rather than his official duties. Now, he was obligated to let congressional committees know that these two investigations, these two cases, Clinton and Weiner, were intersecting. That was a strange formulation I just used. Clinton and Weiner intersecting.
They can't see your small hands.
They can't see my small hands. But what he decided to do was release a very cryptic letter to various chairs of congressional committees that seemed to hint that maybe there might be something more to the Clinton email investigation, but it turns out there's not. But
not
of course,
so far.
That hasn't stopped Republicans and conservative commentators from, you know, turning on the sirens.
Well, worse than that, the way the major media outlets have been handling this thing is to describe them as Hillary's emails.
Right.
If there are any Hillary things, they're simply duplicates of material that was transferred to this particular computer in order to duplicate it, print it out.
Right.
That's all it is.
That's all it is. And the investigators handling the Anthony Weiner case, of course, had no idea of knowing whether the emails in question had already been looked at by the investigators handling the Clinton case.
Right.
So what we have here, again, is much ado about nothing. But it fits into this narrative that conservatives hold about Hillary Clinton, that she must be guilty of something.
Put her in jail.
Put her in jail. Yeah. Now, a quick word about James Comey, because he's a really interesting guy. And really, before the events of the last few days, was generally regarded by people of all persuasions as a pretty ethical, honest, and upright kind of guy. I want to
like J. Edgar Hoover?
No. I want to draw your memories back in time to 2004.
Back.
And this is an event that we talked about on this show because it was just so extraordinary. Now, And around about 2004, and in the years previous, the Bush administration was operating a warrantless surveillance program on American citizens.
No.
Under the guise of the war on terror. Yes. They were spying on Americans, gathering information, going through their private materials without search warrants. This had been authorized by the Department of Justice under then Attorney General John Ashcroft. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
John Ashcroft.
Yeah.
Yes. The hardcore conservative Christian Attorney General. But it turns out that Ashcroft had some serious misgivings about this program, thinking quite rightly that maybe it wasn't okay for the government to spy on Americans without a search warrant. So Ashcroft has to sign off on this program in order for it to be extended. It so happens that Ashcroft has a serious health episode right around the time that his approval is needed to extend this program. So Ashcroft is in the hospital. He hands over power, essentially, to his deputy attorney general, James Comey, who is now the director of the FBI. So Comey is the acting attorney general. Now, Comey is in his home in Washington, D.C., and he gets word in the middle of the night, like 2 a.m., that White House counsel Alberto Gonzalez and White House chief of staff Andrew Card are journeying across town to visit Ashcroft in his hospital room. Do you remember this story?
Yeah.
This was an incredible story. So Comey gets out of bed, throws on some clothes, gets in his car, and takes off in a high-speed pursuit across Washington, D.C. to try to get to the hospital before Gonzalez and Card get there. Because he's figured out what they're up to. And what they're trying to do is approach Ashcroft, a very sick and drugged man in his hospital room, to try and coerce approval for this program out of him. So when Comey arrives at the hospital room, Gonzalez and Card are already there trying to get Ashcroft to give his approval to this program. Comey comes in the room, and in the scene that's straight out of a Hollywood film, Ashcroft, very sick, highly sedated, apparently sort of levers himself up on one elbow, and he says that Comey is the acting attorney general. He has the power in this situation, and they're not going to renew this program, and makes that explicitly clear. So Ashcroft and Gonzalez and Card have no recourse but to back down at that point. Mm-hmm. The warrantless surveillance program lapses into alleged non-existence, although later some evidence came out that it continued to go on. And Comey is hailed by all people as a sort of this nonpartisan white knight who stepped in and stopped a serious abuse of power, mm-hmm. and an attempt to take advantage of a very, very sick man. So Comey was trusted in the wake of this event and eventually offered the directorship of the FBI under President Obama.
Yes, well, the FBI itself is a thing that ought to disappear entirely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh.
It has no function.
It has no function?
No.
Oh.
Everything that it does in the way of law enforcement is done by other agencies, either locally, statewide, or nationally. The FBI is unnecessary. The FBI was the creation of the mindset of a fascist, J. Edgar Hoover, who abused power endlessly during his career.
Yes, he did. But whether or not the FBI is irrelevant, it wields a whole lot of power right now in the present.
That may be.
Let's go to the phones. Jim, good morning.
Hi. Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. You know as well as I do that Trump isn't going to make it, and the Republican Party is going to be destroyed after this thing. Why don't you take the positive things that Hillary will be doing,
mm-hmm.
Probably 12 or 14 or 15, 16 things, and actually promote them and describe what they will do in a positive way for our country once she gets in, rather than spending time knocking down things that don't need to be knocked down anymore.
It's an interesting criticism. One of the problems we face is a limitation imposed upon us by the federal government as a nonprofit. We are a nonprofit, which does not allow us to advocate for candidates specifically in a positive way.
No, yeah, I'm not asking you to advocate, but I'm asking you to explain the positions that she has on certain issues that will be a benefit to the country once she gets in.
Well, why don't you name two or three now, since you're here.
What she plans to do?
Yeah.
Oh, for instance, the broadband internet available to all households. For instance, the infrastructure that she hopes to put into play, and it'll cost 3,000,000 jobs for that one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Dealing with climate change, what she hopes to do for the Supreme Court, what she hopes to do about the renewable energy and infrastructure and so on. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about, voter rights, protection of voter rights. The cabinet will be, half of it will be women. These kind of things, which would I think, as far as KBOO is concerned, would be a lot better if you could build up the positive rather than knock down the negative, since the negative isn't going to be around that much anymore. What I'm asking you to do is to go ahead and promote your platform and your position and the value of what's going to happen in America, rather than knocking something down that and everybody's knocking that down.
Okay, well, so that's
fair point.
That's my
fair point.
No, I think it's a good criticism.
That's my request that you and KBOO would do over the next month or so, maybe.
Well, it's a week.
Take a couple of issues. Yeah, I know that, but promote it right through, because many people might have a negative attitude about it anyway.
Okay, I think it's a good criticism. I doubt very much that I'll get to it, because I'm more cynical than anybody, and totally believe we're in late stage capitalism, early stage fascism. As you know, I've said that a lot.
Yeah, but that means that you're hopeless, and we don't want hopeless. We want hope. We want positive build up rather than neck down.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, that's my request.
Sure.
All right.
Guys.
Hey,
thanks
for the call. Bye-bye. Appreciate it.
He has a point.
Yeah, he does.
But I
know you can't be bothered.
No, it's not I can't be bothered. I think that because Trump is so absolutely fascist and weird, there's no problem in my mind about the selection of who to vote for. But at the same time, I have never thought well of Hillary. I'm sorry. It's not anything personal. I don't even know the woman, really.
I wouldn't expect that you did.
No.
All right, who's next? Vernon, good morning.
Wow.
Hello.
Hello, Vernon. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. Yes, sorry.
That's okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all.
Okay.
I think that we're taking Trump altogether too seriously. In fact, I don't believe he was ever intended to win. He's a stalking horse. He's a distraction. And all of these charges that they're bringing against Hillary are silly. Because we're not talking about the things she's actually guilty of. She's a war criminal.
Now that's a pretty that's a serious charge.
Libya was on the par of what we hung Germans for after World War II.
No, you're going to need to explain that. Now, Hillary Clinton is a war criminal. Why? Why?
How is she a war criminal? You got to explain when you say something as serious as that.
She led the campaign to bomb the hell out of Libya, and Libya had done nothing to offend another nation. That was aggressive warfare, which, according to the trials at Nuremberg, is the highest war crime.
Okay.
Okay. And?
And how much more do you need? She has supported wars throughout her career. She has always supported military spending. She said nothing about cutting any of this back. She's, in fact, promised a no-fly zone over Syria, which is a de facto declaration of war against Russia. Russia are the ones who are flying over Syria.
I disagree with the decision to intervene in Libya, and I think that that's a legitimate criticism of Hillary Clinton that she supported it. But I don't know if you could accuse her of being a war criminal.
They're not talking about that during the race. They're ignoring the candidates. I mean, both Gary Johnson and Jill Stein have brought this mm-hmm. up, but they don't get to talk.
That's true, yes.
The media ignores them completely.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think if you actually polled the American people on the issues, you'd find that Jill Stein, possibly Gary Johnson, are much closer to the heart of the American people than either of these idiots that we're spending all our time looking at.
That could very well be true.
The media has completely hijacked our election. It has, nothing to do with reality.
Well, reality is a crutch here. that obviously is used by anyone in an opportunistic way. That is, one selects one's own reality. I agree with you in your analysis. It would be good, but not likely, if we had a multiple-party political system, something like many European countries, something like, for example, Iceland, who just amazes me. But that's not where... Let me finish. That's not where we're at. Go ahead.
In Benton County, we have a local measure to introduce ranked choice voting.
Oh, nice.
Which leads us toward a multi-party democracy.
Oh, yeah, I think that's a great
one
idea.
One very small step, but we need to go statewide with that. We need to go nationwide with it eventually, but...
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you there. I think that would be a positive step toward democracy.
Yeah, well, good on you in Benton County. I didn't know about that.
And I would like to encourage everyone who's listening who agrees with this, please vote Green Party.
Okay.
Green Party offers a great alternative, and we need those votes. Even 5% makes a huge difference for us.
All right.
Hey, thank you very much for the call.
I appreciate the call, and I appreciate the thought. Thanks a lot, man.
All right. Brian writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abajoe, to say, what makes all this weirdness and personal attacks even possible is that the U.S. election season is the U.S. election season, which starts the day after presidential and midterm elections. This only plays more and more into the hands of the wealthy and the appalling corporate media, which are the real profiteers. In the U.K. and in other industrialized nations, it's around 2 months of intensive campaigning, equal airtime, then bang, it's over, whether you like the result or not. I really can't argue with that at all.
No,
I would be happy to see our campaign season shortened to 3 or 4 months.
I almost think it would take a constitutional amendment to make that happen.
I would be all in favor of that. Absolutely. And equal airtime and completely publicly funded campaigns.
That is a good idea. All those are good ideas. You know they're never going to happen.
No, of course not. Let's go to the phones. Brian, good morning.
Yeah, different Brian than the one who wrote on Facebook.
All right.
But I got a couple of comments. I want to follow up on two callers ago talking about positive things. And then just the last caller, what I find interesting, again, is you both seem, and Joe, my criticism of you is you've been on KBOO for 20 years, and it's time to get somebody else to host this show. I know what your opinions are. You support the Democrats always, rarely say anything positive about the Greens. The gentleman, I'm surprised you two didn't know that RCV, ranked choice voting, is on the ballot in Oregon and Corvallis, put there by the Pacific Green Party. We're in Oregon. Hillary Clinton is going to win Oregon by more than 250,000 votes. Anybody who's listening, if you support the Green Party, vote for Jill Stein. It's BS, this fear stuff about Trump and all that. I don't know what's going to happen on the national election, but I do know that Hillary's going to win Oregon by 250,000 votes, probably more than that in Washington. And the things that we just mentioned, this last gentleman just mentioned about changes, about public financing, those are all part of the Green Party platform. That's what the Greens work on all over the world. It's in our values. We stand up for it universally. And you're right, it's not going to happen under the Democrats. The guy two things ago said, what positive is going to happen? We know what's going to happen under Hillary Clinton. More corporate domination. I'm tired of listening to Democrats' words about what they're going to do, because they've been in power the whole time I've been an adult, and they haven't done crap. Now I'll let you talk.
Hey, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
I wish I had more enthusiasm for Jill Stein, but I don't want to get into that. I do think that we, as a nation, don't have political parties that represent the interests of the majority of people. And I think the Democrats and Republicans are collective messes having to do with the interests of the ruling class. I understand the caller's anxiety and anger about all this.
I can't disagree philosophically with anything the caller said. I think some of it, in point of fact, I don't think we are the slavish devotees to the Democratic Party that he makes us out to be. Personally, speaking for myself, for most of the last 20 years, I've been a member of the Green Party. I changed my registration to Democratic earlier in the year to vote for Bernie in the primary, and I have since changed it to unaligned. we talk about third parties on this program with relative frequency, I think, compared to other talk radio shows across the spectrum, including why it's a better idea for the Green Party to work harder in off-year elections at the local level than it is for them to try and push a nominee into the White House, which probably isn't going to happen in the foreseeable future, not without that that broad growth of the party at the state and local levels. So, yeah, I think that that was not entirely accurate on the part of the caller, but yeah, I'm with him in spirit, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your Majesty Jackson III writes into the Facebook page, love that name, saying, please stop calling the alt-right by the cute name alt-right. Call it what it is, American conservatism in its white, supremacist, misogynist, and authoritarian image.
Too long. Too many words.
Racist guys who are good at using the internet. In its eyes, the straight white man is usually the victim. The world is actually run by women who use sex and victimhood to gain influence. And brown Americans live fat off the tax dollars of white people. It's nothing more than the KKK 2.0. Alt-right is just a cute name for white supremacy. Please call it what it is.
Well, I think that's a good argument.
I do, too.
I do. And I use the term alt-right because it's a new term. Yep. That I want people to be familiar with.
And you're hip with all the new terms.
I'm very hip with all the new terms, yes. Especially new terms that are in the New York Times.
Right. Printed on paper.
Yeah,
exactly.
I'm a paper kind of guy.
All right, let's go to the phones. Elliot, good morning.
Elliot.
Yes. Before I moved to Portland, I was a resident and homeowner in South Brooklyn and had the pleasure of having Anthony Weiner as my congressional liaison to
Does he have small
Schumer,
hands?
My city councilman, and then my congressman.
Okay.
And the last time I saw him before I moved out here, he was driving down Nostrand Avenue like Elvis in a 1950s convertible to celebrate his most recent unopposed victory. And all I can say is Anthony, you know, many people who are concerned about the connotations of their last name changed the pronunciation to Weiner. And Anthony,
well, that doesn't
in the
help.
Neighborhood, was known as Weiner, the Weiner with a WH because of his political style. But I think he could solidify his position in history and reassure me as a Bernie contributor who already mailed off for his vote for Hillary because I was born in one of the crappiest buildings Donald Trump ever owned. I think when Hillary takes the oath of raises her hand to take the oath of office from Roberts, Anthony should streak across the reviewing stand, probably in an aroused state.
Well, that's a clear image, a very powerful image.
Perfect capstone for this campaign.
Might even get a statue of himself after that.
I think you've brought the absurdity to its climax.
Yes.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
That would make me so happy.
That would make you happy?
Oh yeah, that
well,
would
you
be,
are easily pleased.
That would just
say.
Be the surrealist icing on this cake. That would be fantastic.
Well, if it all didn't matter, it would be cool.
Yeah.
But I'm very frightened about the consequences of a Clinton presidency. I'm also frightened, very frightened, of the possibility of a fascist idiot becoming president. That's the one who's not Clinton.
All right. Let's go to the phones. Barry, good morning.
Please hang up now.
Oh, that's the hang up lady.
Yeah. Okay. Who's next?
We don't.
Annalisa. Hey,
Annalisa.
How you doing?
I haven't heard from her in a while. Hi, Annalisa.
Good morning. Well, I think I might have brought this up before, but I think all the people and want to vote for Jill Stein should vote for Jill Stein.
Sure.
And I don't care who wins, then those people at least have the satisfaction that they voted for the person that they support. And also, I think Hillary Rodham Clinton has learned a lot from this adversary that she is fighting against.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish that she would just ignore him and go on and tell us more about her policies. But apparently she doesn't get a chance to do that. But all the people, and I know a few that want to vote for Jill Stein, should do so. And maybe then, if there are maybe millions, then somebody will start paying attention. And then we might get third parties in the next time.
Well, and in part I agree with you. Certainly it is the case in a state like Oregon, where the opportunity exists to vote for a third party, and where the consequence in terms of the frightening possibilities of a Trump presidency doesn't exist, certainly here it would make sense. I think it's up to individuals. I'm not a particularly strong fan of Jill Stein for a variety of reasons, which I don't want to go into because I don't see the advantage of that to anybody. However, I certainly agree that we have to begin the process of developing parties other than the fat cat Democrats and the even fatter cat Republicans.
Exactly. Well, that's all I have to say.
Okay.
Hey, thanks very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Vote for whom you like. You know, vote for the person you think will make the best president, period.
Oh, you know, I'll vote for you if you'll vote for me.
Well, I'm not on the ballot. Are you on the ballot?
No.
Okay. I'm, you know, no.
I haven't been on the ballot in years.
This electoral calculus that everybody twists themselves around to trying to figure out, you know, about the Electoral College and can I afford to vote for whom I want in my state? Just vote for whom you want.
Okay.
That's my position.
That's it?
Yeah.
Naive, sweet kind of way of looking at things. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
I feel like I should, if this were TV, I'd pat you on the head.
Yeah, but please don't.
You'd probably be mad.
That would be creepy.
You probably wouldn't find that creepy. Amusing. No.
All right, who's next? Barry.
Same Barry?
yes. Hi. Joe or Abe?
This is Abe.
Oh, Abe, yeah. I don't understand that Cable, being 501c3, doesn't talk more about the third-party candidates being Jill Stein or Gary Johnson.
Well, we
and not only that... how our news media has duped people, duped society many times over. This is one of them. Either you vote Democrat, Republican, or there are two other candidates. That's the way I see it. We've got to vote according to our conscience. Would you follow up with that?
Certainly. And thanks very much for the call. I appreciate it. All right, here's what I laid out regarding third-party governance. This was several weeks ago on the show. I don't remember exactly when. But it goes something like this. Every 4 years, the Greens and other third parties throw up a presidential candidate. And they encourage everybody to vote for that candidate, saying, you know, vote for the person who best embodies your hopes, your dreams, your personal beliefs, your platform, as it were. You know, and that's fine. And I encourage people to do that if that's what they want to do. If Jill Stein lays out governance the way you think it ought to be, then by all means, vote for her. Now, I think this happens to be a pretty ineffective strategy. I don't think the Greens or any other party is going to get their presidential candidate elected that way. I think it's what it's going to take is a lot of long-term grassroots work at the state and local levels, going door to door, campaigning for green candidates for city council, for county commission, for the soil and water board, for whatever, and then the state legislature, and then Congress. And then once you've got a critical mass of elected officials and this apparatus built up, then you can start making a serious push to have a presidential candidate elected. It's not enough every 4 years just to say vote for this person because he or she embodies all that you hold dear. Now, again, I don't want to discourage people from doing that. If Jill Stein's where it's at for you, vote for Jill Stein. But in terms of the Green Party becoming a viable political force, it's going to take more than a presidential candidate every 4 years. Now, before you call up and yell at me for disregarding the work that the Greens have done, I know that it's going on because I myself, as I just mentioned, was a former Green Party member, and I'm aware of some of the stuff happening. Now, I didn't know what was happening in Benton County with the instant runoff election measure. That is great.
Well, that's a good idea.
Yes, for sure. That's the sort of change that the Green Party can affect right now in various jurisdictions around the country. But it's going to take that sort of thing all the time in off years, in between elections, in local elections for seemingly insignificant offices. That's what it's going to take over a great deal of time to build the Greens into a viable force. Who's next? John, good morning.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. This is obviously one of the most contentious. Let me tell you a brief story. I'm 58 years old, and I delivered newspapers when I was a kid. So throughout all of the end of the Vietnam War and the Watergate era, I read the newspaper every day, the Baltimore Sun.
Used to be a great paper.
It was a very good paper, and it's informed my character because I was developmentally, intellectually developing at that point, and I was being stimulated constantly by my constant exposure to the news on a daily basis. So I inadvertently became fairly literate and news aware. At this moment in time, when people disagree with each other, they tend to ascribe stupidity, moral depravity to the other side. I've been listening to both sides, and there is an almost mirror image effect, which is if you disagree with me, that you are there. You had one caller called in and just associated the alt-right with white supremacy, and that's the liberal version of you disagree with me, therefore you are immoral. The right has the exact, it has a mirror image of that going on. We've talked before about the line out of The Second Coming by W.B. Yeats, and mm-hmm. I've said that the line, which is the center will not hold. I myself personally feel to be in the center with a whirling centrifuge I think I agree with Joe. You described it as the end stage capitalism. And I fear that we are just simply in the process of social dissolution. It's gotten to such a point that it's going to progress no matter who gets elected into office, and that our personal moral self-righteous indignation towards everybody else, you know, we all need to look in the mirror, I think. And I'll let you go. I wish that I had more hope for the world because I have children. And that is my deepest fear, is that that I brought them into a world that if I had known what it's going to turn out to be at this point, I would not have done it. And so I live with that fear. Have a good day, gentlemen. Thank you.
Well, I'm sorry that you've reached this point. You know, I share, I think, many of your misgivings about the state of the world, but I can't, and Joe, you'll probably think I'm naive for this. But if you let go of the notion that we can't fix it, then it's all over. Of course we can fix it. Of course we can.
Well, I don't know about of course we can. It's very possible that things might get better. But right now, they're getting worse.
True. And again, I got to say, things are getting worse. You're absolutely correct. But I have to say that you're wrong about end-stage capitalism. You're talking about capitalism ending and transitioning into fascism. I say, if we come up with a fascist form of government, capitalism will still be alive and well. It's just our form of government that will have changed. Capitalism is robust and will continue to be robust for the foreseeable future. This isn't the end.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm not going to... That is a conversation for another time. I really do think, and I think it's important to understand this, that we exist in an odd plane of reality which does not itself correspond to what's going on in the world. I just was reading a very good piece of writing talking about the truth of the matter of North Korea's creation of nuclear weapons and of long-range ballistic rockets. It turns out that all came about not just because they're crazy, which one could argue about, but because of the policies of the United States and of South Korea and of an effort by essentially our side, if you will, to dominate the world surrounding China and the world, which includes Japan. And when you do an analysis of that sort, you suddenly realize what is seemingly a cut and dried little crazy guy thing is, yeah, it's a little crazy guy thing, but the little crazy guy exists and makes a weird kind of sense, pardon me, because the United States and its allies, essentially, particularly the United States, boxed in North Korea and left it with, in its own perception, very little choice. But I don't want to spend the rest of this show talking about North Korea. I only bring it up as an example of what I think's going on.
Of why we're doomed.
Why we're doomed.
All right, okay. I just don't think we're doomed. Maybe that's the difference.
You don't think we're doomed?
No.
You think we think everything's going to be good?
No, I think things will probably get worse before they get better. But
how,
I think we'll
what's
figure
the timeline here?
Decades.
Oh, then in other words, in your lifetime, it's not going to get better.
It might.
It might.
It
okay.
Might.
Well, good. I mean, okay. You know, I the other day I thought about unicorns, and that helped.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever gets you through the day, man. All right. Dean writes into the Twitter machine. That's at HonestAbe72 to ask: is James Comey bullied, bought, or both? I think he is bullied. He took a lot of heat from fellow conservatives a couple months ago when he announced that the FBI had found no justification to bring any charges against Secretary Clinton. He took a lot of heat for that because, as I mentioned earlier, he's a Republican. So this time around, I think he was acting out of fear of how he would be perceived by conservatives. And that's what motivated him to drop this bomb a week before a national election.
Well, your analysis, not a wrong analysis, but an analysis based on persona, personality, I disagree with. I think it is inherently impossible to have a national police agency with a history like the FBI to have such an agency and have such an agency be in any way fair. It has always been bad. It has always been riven with lies, deceit, and right-wing thinking. Never has that not been the case, even with more liberal heads. It's a bad thing. It should be done away with.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. Harvey, good morning.
Hi, Abe and Joe. Can I make a point about the Dakota Access Pipeline?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay, yesterday the police arrested activists at the San Francisco headquarters of Citibank who are protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline funding. And Earth has had 16 straight months of record high temperatures, and our atmosphere has more carbon in it than it's had in the last 15 million years. So here's a way for us to make a difference and stand with America's indigenous tribal people in their fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline. If you Google the words banks who are financing the Dakota Access Pipeline, some of the banks are Bank of America, Wells Fargo, HSBC, UBS, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, and Citibank. And the fossil fuel industry, along with the banks, are diminishing our chances for a better life for us and our children. So we can all take part by calling our local bank if they're part of that list and telling them that if they continue to invest in the Dakota Access Pipeline, that you're going to move your account to a credit union.
Oh, I like this.
Yeah.
Vote with your dollars. I like it.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Thanks a lot.
And I'm really glad you called. I think it's a very important issue. And honestly, if it weren't for the fact that this stupid election is coming up, I would spend a lot more time, and maybe I should, on the struggle that's going on at Standing Rock. It's really an archetypal struggle. It involves the betrayal of Native American peoples in our history. It involves the environmental dangers of the pipelines itself. It involves the greed and stupidity of the energy industry in the face of a need to shift energy development to renewables. I mean, there's so many issues here. And I think it's really important. Meanwhile, here's what I want to leave with today. If you are kind of reluctant to vote because you don't like the candidates, or if you feel like it's all something, and I encourage this, unfortunately, in the way I talk, that fills you with despair and you want to walk away, don't. This is an election of great importance. It is entirely possible that Donald Trump could end up president of the United States. Now, maybe that's a great way to have the whole thing crash, but maybe. I don't think so. So I think all of you have it have an important obligation today and throughout this week to get out and vote and get everyone you know to vote.
And I would say the down ballot measures in Oregon right now, especially here in Portland, are more important right now than the presidential election.
Absolutely. So
all the more reason for you to go out and vote.
And this is, you know, this is despite the ugliness of it all, this is a really important election.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for calling in today. We really appreciate your feedback. I'm sorry that we couldn't get to all of you. When we come back next week, it will be Election Day.
Election Day.
The end is in sight, my friends. The end is in sight.
Thank you all. You stay tuned to KBOL. We inform you, we entertain you, and we really do care about your politics.
Hi, this is Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, congratulating Kathleen Stevenson on her retirement after nearly 30 years as KBOO's AM News and Public Affairs Director. Kathleen started at KBOO as a volunteer in 1985 and joined the staff just a few years later. During her decades at KBOO, she greatly expanded KBOO's literary and cultural programming. Kathleen, it's been such an honor and pleasure to work alongside you. Congratulations, and thank you for all that you've done for KBOO and for all of us in independent media.
On November 4th and November 18th, from 8 p.m. until 10, from the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary. We will focus on Mr. Gil Scott-Heron. Gil Scott-Heron established the attitude and stylistic vocabulary of socially conscious music in America. His music was powerful, his lyrics relevant, and his voice beautiful. We will also submit a musical goodbye and a love letter to President Barack Obama. So join us from